For the first case, please. Lake Forest Park versus Lake Forest Park Water District versus City of Lake Forest Park.
Good morning. My name is Darrell Deutsch. I'm here on behalf of the Lake Forest Park Water District, and I'd like to reserve most of my time, let's say 7 minutes for rebuttal. The Water District is appealing the dismissal on summary judgment of its quiet title action. And this case arises out of an ordinance enacted by the City of Lake Forest Park in 1988, vacating certain unopened streets that were laid out in two plats that were established back in 1912. And those streets had never been opened. And the Water District for decades had used a number of the lots that it owned in those plats, as well as the adjacent unopened streets, for Water District purposes, primarily its Water District watershed and related pertinences such as shallow and deep public drinking wells, pumps, and other.
Why does any of that use have anything to do with the issues in front of us today?
Just background.
You only took 3 minutes. You
okay.
Used an awful lot of it for something that hasn't got anything to do with what you want us to decide.
The statutory law expressly provides that when a city vacates streets in a plat, that title vests in the adjacent owners to the center line of those plats, and that's RCW 35.79.040. Therefore, the Water District maintains as a matter of law that in 1988, when the city enacted and then recorded, by the way, its ordinance, that title vested in it.
What evidence is there in the record that the City of Lake Forest Park would ever have vacated the right-of-way if it had understood at the time that it couldn't retain ownership of the right-of-way?
The record establishes clearly that it was the intent of the city to preserve the watershed. That word is used all throughout the record.
You're not getting anywhere near the question I just asked you. What evidence is there in the record that the City of Lake Forest Park would have still vacated the right-of-way if it had understood at the time that it could not retain ownership?
It's all legal argument, Your Honor, at this point, based upon the facts. There is nothing.
What is there in the record that would support your side of the ledger that the city would have passed this ordinance even if it had understood that it couldn't retain ownership?
There are no specific facts, Your Honor, that address that issue, since the city at that time thought they could retain title.
Given that, how does the severability clause survive the general rule that we don't enforce severability clauses if the legislative body would not have enacted the legislation without the void provision?
Well, the cases also state, Your Honor, that if they're able to accomplish the objective, even without the severance, that objective will sustain the legislation. And here, Your Honor, retaining title was not the objective. It was the means to the end. It was the means for preserving the watershed area, because they thought that by retaining title, they could prevent development of that property. And they have achieved that objective because the Water District has preserved the watershed into the state.
Does the Water District own all of the adjacent property to the vacated right-of-way?
They own a substantial portion of it. There is nothing in the record.
Who owns the rest of it?
Honestly, Your Honor, I do not know on the record.
The record doesn't tell us, so the record wouldn't support that ownership would be preserved, would it?
The record is silent on that issue, Your Honor. I think my time has expired, and I'll reserve the remainder for rebuttal.
Good morning, Your Honors. Anne Marie Soto on behalf of Respondent, City of Lake Forest Park. This case boils down to one issue. Did Ordinance Number 398, which was contingent upon the city retaining title to the vacated right-of-way, actually vacate the right-of-way?
If there was a contingency intended, why is there a severability clause?
Well, the severability clause could cover other matters such as incorrect legal descriptions or issues with process. It doesn't only tie back to the title provision.
If you had a problem like that, the vacation would be ineffective, wouldn't it?
That's correct.
So you wouldn't need a severability clause. You'd still have the property.
Well, if only a portion of the, let's just say a portion of the legal description was incorrect, but the remainder was proper, then we would argue that the vacation did occur as to the extent that it covered the valid portions of the legal description, but not the remainder.
The city tried to accomplish something clearly prohibited by state law. Do you agree?
Yes.
Why should the city now be rewarded to get a do-over when it was such a clear, even at the time, violation of state law?
Well, I don't think the city is necessarily asking for a do-over. What it's trying to do is accomplish its legislative intent, which really is the intent of both parties, which is to protect the watershed area. The city council
says the record adequately shows that the water district will protect it, and there's no need to have the property belong to the city to accomplish that purpose. How do you respond to that?
Well, the record shows that they do not own the entire portion of the abutting properties along the right-of-way, so they cannot guarantee, and they did not guarantee, that the other property owners would not develop the property.
Is there anything in the record to suggest that any of the other adjacent owners have any intent to develop the property?
There's nothing in the record, but I think that's due to the fact that all of the property owners, including the water district, believed up until a few years ago that the city owned the property. So nobody would have developed the right-of-way because they thought that the city owned it. And in fact, the city's taken steps to put in a pedestrian trail, which was the intent all along, was to preserve the area and make it a recreation area, allowing for a pedestrian trail. And so the city undertook those efforts, and that's what brought about this lawsuit.
Now, the city didn't need to pass an ordinance to retain the property. The city needed to pass an ordinance to vacate the right-of-way. It did that, and it did it in a lawful manner.
So what we have here is a city that has broad discretionary and police powers to control its rights-of-way. They didn't need to take any action to protect that interest, the full possessory interest that they had in that right-of-way.
Precisely my point, but they did enact an ordinance vacating the right-of-way. At that point, as a matter of law under the statute, they lost title to the street.
They passed an ordinance purporting to vacate the right-of-way, but because it has that unseverable provision, which was contingent upon title retaining with the city, the ordinance was invalid at
What's your best case to support your contention that that provision is unseverable?
State versus Anderson. State versus Anderson provides that if the invalid provision can be removed.
Was there a severability clause in the legislation passed in Anderson in the gambling bill?
Yes, there was. But the severability clause covered more than one item. Here, the severability clause expressly says that the ordinance is passed in conjunction with Resolution 391. Resolution 391 was the resolution which initiated the right-of-way vacation, and Resolution 391 expressly states that the ordinance would be considered provided that the ordinance retained title in the name of the city. That was the condition, provided that the title remained with the city.
That makes it very unclear to me then why the severability provision was put in there at all, and why we should ignore the severability provision.
Well, as I mentioned earlier, there are other items that could have been covered by the severability provision. But as State versus Anderson says, it's not only the severability clause that the courts look to. They also look at the legislative history. And here the legislative history compellingly establishes that the City Council would not have adopted Ordinance 398 had it thought that it could not retain title, and severing out that provision renders the remainder of the ordinance incapable of accomplishing their goal of protecting the right-of-way through preventing development. Neither party can guarantee that the other abutting property owners wouldn't develop the property.
If all of the adjacent property owners tendered to the city restrictive covenants protecting the property against development, would you be able to make the same argument you're making?
Well, that's a hypothetical that is not in play here, but I suppose that that could be the case, but I can't say what other property owners would do, and the city wouldn't have control over that.
Assume what I have just represented, my hypothetical, is true. Would that eliminate the city's argument?
It could potentially eliminate the argument, but at the same time, there are other issues in play, which is the fact that the city has already undertaken steps to turn this property into trail.
Why would that make any difference in the analysis? Your argument seems to be to accomplish our purpose, the vacation can't be valid. If there was another way demonstrated as a matter of law that the purpose was accomplished, why would any development effort play any role in the analysis?
I suppose it would not, Your Honor.
Well, counsel, the city held title to the street ends for the purposes of transportation. Those were platted as streets and for that purpose. The city did not hold them for purposes of constructing buildings on them or building parks on them. Why isn't the appropriate alternative that the city vacate the street reservation and condemn the property for park use, as since that is a power given to the city for the purpose of acquiring property for uses other than streets?
That is an option that the city could undertake at this point in time if the court here were to decide that the property was vacated. But
well, it's a street. It needs to be used for street purposes, not for park purposes.
The way that the street was platted, it says it was used for travel. So the city would argue that pedestrian purposes, which is what this area has been historically used for, would still be covered under the plat, which allowed this area to be used for purposes of travel. It doesn't limit it to vehicular travel or any other type of specific travel. It just says for travel.
So would a light rail line be permitted under that reading?
I suppose it would. It would be probably infeasible to put a light rail line through this ravine area, and I don't think the city would ever want to do that because the city's ultimate goal is to protect the watershed area through to preventing development. So I don't think the city would ever contemplate putting in a light rail.
So the city's purpose has nothing to do with travel. It has to do with preserving the watershed.
Correct, through preventing development through that watershed
and
area.
Normally, if you prevent development, you pay compensatory benefits to those who lose those development rights and lose those property rights.
And what the city's arguing is that while that may be the case if the property were condemned, at this point in time, the city argues that the vacation never occurred and the property is just as it sat back in 1988 before the city adopted Ordinance 398.
Is there any Washington case that you can identify for us that authorizes a municipality to use a property dedicated to the public for travel purposes for other purposes instead?
Not that I can think of, Your Honor, and we did not cite Tony in our brief.
And the law around 1912, when it was platted, certainly wasn't high on pedestrian access. It was all streets.
Correct. So I'd just like to finish with one final note, Your Honors, and that is, as you've already identified, the city has broad discretionary powers in regulating its rights of way. But what the district's position here is to undermine the legislative intent in adopting Ordinance 398. It, at the same time, it also undermines their goal in protecting the watershed area because they cannot guarantee that other property owners won't develop this property. This is not the result that was contemplated by the City of Lake Forest Park Council in 1988. It's presumably not the intent of the appellants now, and it's clearly not in the public interest. Thank you.
Just a few perhaps random points, absent questions from the panel here, but the party challenging, in this case the city, has, according to state law, heavy burden, and the legislative determination, I'm quoting here, will be sustained if the court can reasonably conceive of any state of facts to justify that determination. Now, given the history here and the legislative history that the city finds to be so important, with the intent of preserving the watershed area and with the fact that the watershed area has, in fact, been preserved because of this vacation, and there is no evidence to the contrary. In fact, the
evidence is there that preservation will continue forward in perpetuity?
That's a pretty big task to say in perpetuity, but
let's say 30 years.
Okay, well, the fact that we have a lake public or semi-public entity, Lake Forest Park Water District, whose sole existence is to provide water, safe water to the public, an important component of that is for preserving the watershed, and there are declarations and other evidence before the court as part of the record that is what they are doing, and there's no suggestion or evidence that there's any plan to terminate the water district. Obviously, people have to have drinking water, and with all the public...
Is there evidence of a 20 or 30-year plan the water district has for its system? I know they're required to develop long-term plans.
Your Honor, there's nothing in the record that discusses that point. I'm honestly not certain why the city is so intent on trying to retain title on an ordinance that passed in 1988 where its goal has been accomplished. And the fact that the streets in 1912 are in ravines, even as council mentioned, to a large extent, basically watershed-type property in the first place, it never really had any potential to be opened as streets. They were never opened, and they probably should have been vacated years ago, but nevertheless it happened in 1988. And over, you know, a quarter century plus has passed. There's a huge gap in time between what happened then and now, and the rights of the district vested years ago, and those rights cannot be sidestepped by a repeal, which, by the way, the city attempted to do after we filed our complaint. One day before summary judgment motions were filed, they actually repealed the ordinance, and now in their argument, not before the court this morning, but in the briefs, they say that the whole thing is moot. Plenty of case law says you cannot retroactively divest.
But if their ordinance was void, aren't you arguing that the district's rights are by adverse possession, and that's clearly not allowable?
Well, I think, Your Honor, if this was an unconstitutional ordinance, such as certain races or religions couldn't sit on a bus, then it would be void from the beginning. But I don't think this is necessarily void. Perhaps it's voidable.
So an ordinance that is directly contrary to state law is voidable rather than void?
Well, the question is it directly contrary to state law? If we sever off that portion that's contrary to state law, then it's not contrary to state law. And now touching on that issue for a moment.
Do you have a case that says that if we found that the one provision was void at the time it was enacted and that they wouldn't have enacted the other provision of the legislation separately, that that's voidable rather than void?
I do not have a case that fits that precise fact pattern, Your Honor.
Anything even close?
Just the cases that have been cited.
Well, State v. Anderson, they found that the bingo provisions on constitutionality didn't render the rest of the statute void, so it's not any help to us.
Well,
and that's the only case either party has cited for us in Washington on this general principle.
Yeah, well, there are the cases all are pretty consistent that talk about, you know, the importance of the severance clause, and only if, and that severance clause will not apply only if the legislation cannot be implemented as intended otherwise. And again, the point I want to stress here is that retaining title means nothing. It's simply a means to an end, and the end was preserving the watershed. So as the court in Tedder v. Clark County said, it should be sustained if the court can reasonably conceive of any state of facts that justify that ordinance. And the unusual thing here, Your Honor, is you have the city challenging its own ordinance, and I don't have a specific case where that has ever occurred, but this ordinance is a 1.5 pages in length. Counsel said, well, the severance clause could have also applied to the legal description. I don't agree with that. Legal description might have been a clerical error that could have been corrected at some point. But this ordinance, the operable provisions are two short paragraphs. We're not talking about a 1,000-page bill like we find in Congress that nobody ever reads and nobody can figure out what anybody intended. So it's pretty clear. And, you know, the city's saying, well, we made a mistake because of the law. We didn't understand the law that title would actually vest in the adjacent property owners. And then also, we didn't understand the severance clause. We really didn't mean it to be in there. They haven't said that. It was put in there, and it serves a purpose. And taken together with all the other facts, we asked the court to reverse the decision of the trial court and hold that the title to the adjacent property on Open Street should vest in the Water District. Thank you.
Thank you. The next case on today's calendar is State of Washington.